Greetings, Wargamers. We're your hosts, Trevor,
Jay,
Josh,
and this is
Shane Attack.
Is sponsored by Discount Games Incorporated. Discount Games Incorporated offers the maximum discount on Privateer Press products. When you order $30 or more, you will receive free or reduced shipping. You can find the web store at www.discountgamesinc.com. Welcome to Chain Attack Mark 3, all about Twilight Imperium Mark 4. I'm your host, Trevor, and I get my ass kicked by these three. Sorry, spoiler alert.
Everyone expected it.
Look, to be fair, your quote-unquote ass, I don't even know if turtles have that anatomy, didn't even arrive.
It's called a cloaca.
In time. Yeah, your cloaca didn't arrive in time to get kicked anyway, so.
I'm Jay. I'm all in on Twilight Imperium 2017.
And I'm Josh, and I can confirm for years when people ask me, like, they see my board game collection and they're like, what's your favorite game? And I'm like, I have to honestly say Twilight Imperium. But for years, I have felt like a liar and a hypocrite because I haven't played it for so long, right?
Okay.
Confirmed. Still my favorite game. Holy cow.
Yeah, I mean, there's reasons why it doesn't get to your table frequently.
Yeah, probably about 7 or 8 of them reasons.
Well, I more meant a general reason for everybody why it doesn't get to your table frequently and why it's all on our top favorite game list. I mean, we can talk about that in a minute.
Because most people can't handle 8 hours of Salt Fest.
I remember some happy times.
Yeah. And of course, I'm Scott, here once again to conquer the galaxy.
Woohoo! So, this bonus episode of Chain Attack, we're going to... I'm not sure exactly how it's going to go.
We haven't talked about this at all.
What an amazing structure. What are you talking
about? Just freeball it.
That's my policy. So, we're going to... First of all, we're going to give a overview of the rules. Then we're going to talk about... for people who are new to the game, then we'll talk about changes between 3rd edition and 4th edition. Then we'll talk about a battle report that we just played a game last night. And then at the end, we'll give our review of what we think of the game.
You guys only do battle reports when I'm on the show, huh?
It's probably true, yes.
I mean, is this really a battle report? Because I might be in the wrong location.
I mean, it's a battles plural report, Frank.
Explaining the game. This is not an easy game to explain, but we will attempt to tackle it.
You want to start with more of a forest view?
Yes.
It's a 4X game. If you don't know what a 4X game that is, explore, expand.
Exploit.
Exploit and exterminate.
Exterminate. Is that the 4X? Mm-hmm. I've never really... I know 4X. I don't actually know what the 4Xs are.
Yes.
The background of the game is that there is a... long ago, there was a race who reached out amongst the galaxy and united a bunch of other races in a large...
Galactic Empire. Yeah.
That race was known as the Lazaks, and they lived on a planet called Mechatol Rex. And eventually they got complacent. And
you've all seen Game of Thrones. Stuff went bad.
Yeah, stuff went bad. The three of the races in the game rised up and...
The Empire fell.
The Empire fell.
And now we are...
And the Empire's been in darkness for like 3,000 years, where most of the races haven't had contact with each other for a very long time. And there is a kind of a... proxy, I guess, on the throne, just sitting waiting.
Some custodians.
Sure. The custodians, right. And now everyone's getting strong enough to actually venture out again, and somebody must take control.
Seize control of the Empire.
Yes.
So when you set up a game of Twilight Imperium, there's several methods you can use to set up. We used the preset map.
I like the scatterplot method myself.
That's because you're an awful person.
Yeah, you're a sadist.
There is an option where you can construct your own map, which is perfectly fine.
Do you wish we had done that last night?
No, I think for new players that...
I think the preset map is definitely the way to go for this game.
Do you wish that there were more than one preset map?
Yes.
That'd be nice.
I actually do wish that, yeah, because... So, I mean, because you were going to say it adds probably, would you say it adds at least a half hour to an hour if you build your own map?
Oh, probably, yeah.
Yeah.
So. Well, and
I think
it adds some complexity.
You don't
too,
really know what you're looking for or what you're doing on your first game. I mean, you wouldn't know how you would want to set
that up. I wouldn't have known why that cultural planet was going to matter or whatever. Yeah.
But I think that on your second or third game, you certainly could build your own map and have a little bit better understanding. And what happens in that situation is everybody gets some tiles, and you take turns placing tiles, and they have to be placed on the inside of the universe and then move their way out.
Right.
But with the preset map and with the one that you create your own, the number of tiles, et cetera, is going to be the same. The form and structure of it is the same. It's just the tiles might get placed in different locations.
Yeah.
There's always going to be a Mechatol Rex tile in the center.
Right.
The tiles are hexagon, and there is a Mechatol Rex tile in the center, and then three concentric rings that expand out from it. And on the outer ring, there will be the home planets of each of the players.
How many races are there, Jay?
There's 17 races currently. There will be more with future expansions.
Which, one thing, big props to Fantasy Flight for putting all of the previous expansion races in the base game 4th edition.
Yeah.
Big fan of that.
So the right now, in 3rd edition, this game with expansions played up to 8 people. Currently it plays 6 people. In my opinion, it should really be played as either 4 or 6 players.
Oh, really? You don't think it should be 8? Oh, you're saying the 4th
edition.
8
is not currently.
Okay, sorry.
5 is right out.
Odd is weird. Don't play odd is what you're really saying.
Yes, basically. And 3 is too small.
Yeah.
I don't have as much hatred for 5. It is weird. There is one person who gets kind of screwed. I think they've done a better job in this edition than previous editions of handling that 5th player, but it certainly isn't the best. I would rather have 6.
But I mean, to Jay's point, really, that 5th guy, he's not a good enough friend to invite, so don't. Or tell him to bring a 6th guy that's competent. You know,
fair.
Okay.
Yes. Okay.
Bring a punching bag, please.
These systems have planets on them. They'll have different anomalies like nebulas or supernovas or gravity rifts, etc.
Right.
Asteroids.
The planets will all have resources.
Correct.
And
they'll have 2 stats.
Influence.
There's also a couple of some hexes have wormholes, which act exactly as you would expect. There's an alpha wormhole and a beta.
They become neighbors,
essentially. The wormhole hexes are considered adjacent for all purposes.
Okay.
Okay, so the other thing that happens during the setup is there is a there are some public victory conditions that get shuffled up. And so there's category 1 and there's category 2.
Are there always objectives? Are there always 6 then, Jay?
There's five
of the category 1, 5 of the category 2.
Correct.
Okay. But you start with 2 of the category 1.
2 of the category 1 are revealed. And so the category 1s are each worth 1 victory point. And it could be stuff like spend 8 influence.
Yeah. Have certain technologies.
Correct. Those will all be worth.
Don't think that's.
I scored that one. You were so mad about it.
Those are all going to be worth 1 point. Once you get deeper into the game, then the category 2 victory point conditions come up. They're generally twice as difficult to achieve, and
they're worth
2 victory points.
Right.
I will note that I find this humorous. If you actually make it to the very end of the public objective track, reveal the last one, at the end of that turn, it's game over. The game ends.
Correct.
It just ends.
Whoever has the most points wins, right?
Yeah. Who the hell is going to go that long?
I guess if you feel like
it happened to us at least once.
If you're blind to objectives and just want to play Risk.
Maybe.
Or maybe you just keep developing the amazing technologies.
I could see myself stumble upon enough to score 10.
Yeah, I don't know how you don't just blind.
This is all rampant speculation, but I have a memory in 3rd edition that there were maybe agendas or there were ways to have more of them get revealed to sort of accelerate the time. That could happen.
Yes. Sure.
But you're right. I think it would be really bizarre.
Certainly for veteran gamers, I think that would be surprising.
So in addition to these public objectives, there are secret objectives, which are also worth 1 point apiece. And the general pacing of the game is, under normal circumstances, each player is only allowed to score 1 secret objective, which are worth 1 point apiece, and 1 public objective per round. And as soon as somebody hits 10 victory points, they win. It's over.
Instant.
So
when you, at the start of the game, you get dealt 2 secret objectives, you pick amongst them. And keep
one. To have one to start with.
Correct, yeah.
Right.
So the other thing during setup is you will pick your race. The rule book just says select your race. So you can
we house ruled that pretty hard.
You can do however you want.
You can do however you want.
Yeah.
But What did we ended up dealing out four to everyone.
Which I liked, actually. I mean, but that was for a four-player game, right?
Right.
If in you were a six-player game, you get two.
Yeah.
I guess that's still okay.
You could also just roll off, and high player gets
the race that Scott
pick
says
up everything.
I have a pretty good win rate.
So you pick your race, and next to that, you have kind of a, what do they call it?
A starting setup, like
the tile that goes.
Oh, the hex thing.
You've got your home system tile, which goes in your designated spot in the outer ring.
Jay's actually going to read the actual name for it. I'm impressed.
Yeah, something like that.
The minor complaint of
command sheets.
The command sheet that has a summary on it that doesn't actually have a turn summary on it.
Correct, yes. It does not.
Yeah, fail. My suggestion, if you're listening to this for the first time because you're interested in Twilight Imperium and you want to play it, I would find the turn summary, whether it's in the rules or find a copy of it. I think
it's on the back cover of the Learn to Play.
Yeah.
I would take that and I would go make a copy for every player.
Oh, yes.
Hand them to him, because that's what should
and
have been.
And make that on, part of the sheet. Yeah, that's a great point.
It should have been great on the suggestion. Command sheet,
yep.
And it's not. Go make a copy for everyone so they can see the turn.
And just make it part of their setup.
Yeah.
Also, start accepting applications from people to be your Twilight Imperium friends.
Yes. This is a lengthy game. If you want to play it multiple times, you need to find people willing
We've been posting a bunch about this on social media, and a lot of people are like, oh man, I love this game, but I can never find a play group. And frankly, you just need to find a better set of friends.
Listen, this Twilight Imperium is a great way to weed out the weak blood. Like, if you feel like you got too many social obligations going on, you know, a lot of people full of themselves. Invite them over for TI4.
You totally
thin the herd a little bit.
Right. You need to be a little bit prepared for the one guy whose wife calls 4.5 hours into the game and says, you've got to go home.
I feel like I want a t-shirt that has something like, you know, with the Twilight Imperium logo that basically says, like, call the herd.
Yeah.
If someone's wife called them and they left the game, like,
oh, that's not even friendship ending. That's like,
that's you're never you are
dead to
ever
me.
Again.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah.
Ninjas may visit you.
You need to know when you're getting into this that this is a day commitment.
Oh yeah, and this is no joke. I mean, Twilight Imperium makes Game of Thrones Second Edition look like a tea party.
I will say though, it's funny to see some of the time responses from people who are like hardcore War Machine players,
right?
Because I'm like, have you been to a steamroller tournament?
Yeah,
right. Like, this is shorter than a 4-round tournament.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, and frankly, the fun is more constant. You don't got to wait between rounds. You know what I'm saying?
You don't have people popping Haley feets on you.
Well, that too. Yeah, almost.
Okay, so once you're going to set up the turn structure, there's basically four steps in a single turn. So in the first step is the strategy phase. And so at the start of the game, someone will randomly be selected as speaker, and that player will select the first strategy tile, and then it will proceed clockwise until all the strategy tiles are selected. So the strategy tiles have multiple purposes.
Everyone, if there's six players, everyone will select. There'll be two
one.
Left.
Right, yeah, right. Yeah.
And then two that are left get
a trade good on them.
Yes, essentially.
Yeah, but where we played with four players, if you play with three players, then each player winds up with two.
There's eight strategy tiles,
right.
So we each ended up with two. So the strategy tiles serve several purposes. The first purpose is as soon as you get into the action phase, which is the next phase you'll be going into, and it's the bulk of the game, it is the initiative order. So the tiles have a number from 1 to 8. The lower your number, the higher your initiative. So if you have number 1 leadership, you are going to go first. So real quick, let's go over the strategy cards.
Okay.
So first we have leadership. So one of the resources that you have in this game is command tokens.
One of the most important.
It is the most important resource.
It probably is.
I won't spoiler alert and say who is Lord and Emperor and why they are Lord and Emperor, but it has something to do with these.
So with the other thing with these tiles is that they have a primary ability and a secondary ability. The primary ability is only activated by the person who selects the tile. And they must activate this ability during that turn at some point.
Yeah,
they have to. They have to be activated before they can pass.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Basically, once you get into the action phase on your turn, you take one. You can take either a tactical action or a strategic action. A strategic action
or
involves,
a component action.
Component action. That's true. basically, the strategic action involves flipping your strategy tile face down, initiating the ability, and you are not allowed to pass until you have performed all of your available strategic actions. So all of the secondary and abilities will be available every single round.
Unless it's a six-player game.
Yeah, unless it's a six-player
game. Well, all the ones that are taken.
All the ones that are taken.
Right.
So they're the person who does the primary, usually the primaries are stronger than the secondary abilities, and then everyone else can do the secondary ability. In general, it usually requires, there's three pools on your command sheet. There is the tactical pool, the fleet pool, and the strategic pool. And so generally to use the secondary ability on the command tiles, you have to on the strategy cards, you have to use a strategic command token.
Yeah, I'm afraid that people listening are going to get a little confused. We're talking about two different things here. Strategy tiles, that's the one where you have the primary ability and secondary ability, and command tokens, which are what we're getting.
Which are your resource that you're spending to do stuff.
Right. So the easiest way that I've done to explain this to my friends is any time that you accumulate command tokens, you basically have three pools on your board that you can allocate those to. You have the tactics pool, which is in order to perform your normal tactical action, activate a system, you know, if you want to
move or initiate combat, or build, all kinds of things. You take
a token from that pool, put it on a system, and activate the system and interact with it. You also have your fleet pool, which determines how many ships you're allowed to have in any given hex. And then lastly is your strategic pool, which you spend tokens out of that pool normally to participate in the secondary abilities on the strategic actions, but some races or
there's a few other things you can do with them, but for the most part that's what they're for.
Right.
So tile one, leadership, if you do the primary, you get three command tokens, and then for every three influence you spend, you can get another command token. The secondary, this is the only one, I believe, where you do not spend a command token. The rest you do spend command tokens.
Which makes sense.
This is how you gain them.
Yeah. So you, with the secondary, you spend three influence per command token to gain additional command tokens.
We might want to talk about, so planets all have a resource value and an influence value, and you turn them face down, they become exhausted when you spend them, and you can spend them for one or the other, very similar.
Except totally not tapped.
Totally. Don't turn them sideways. Don't call them tap.
Does this game
until you do?
The funny thing is, this game predates Magic, but
yes.
Yeah, probably.
But anyway,
trademarks are still a thing. So
don't think you can trademark mechanics, but I'm not a lawyer. Nobody's thought them on. I think you can trademark
the term tapped. Mm-hmm. But anyways,
sure. I'm sure they have.
It's still one of my favorite gamer jokes.
So, number one, you gain command tokens. Number two, diplomacy. The primary, basically, it's a way of forcing your opponents to not be able to attack one of your hexes. The secondary, you spend a command token and you unexhaust two planets that are exhausted.
So, tapped untapped. Planets get untapped from spending a strategy command token.
Right, two of them. On the primary, they can, on the system that you protect, they can untap the planets in that system. On politics, you choose someone to become the speaker. Again, the speaker is the person who starts selecting strategy tiles.
But the token has to move.
It has to move. It cannot stay where it was.
Right.
Then they draw two action cards, and then they look at two cards on the agenda deck, and they can either keep them on top of the deck or put them on the bottom.
And we'll talk about the agenda phase later. Right.
Yeah. So just real quickly, though, agendas are laws, things that happen or things that stay in play that change the rules of the game. And action cards are their cards that you can use.
They're usually random instants, basically.
Yeah, that's sorceries and instants, basically. Yeah. I guess we're going to continue this magic thing. But they're just a card that does something.
There's not an action card that's an enchantment, is there?
All of the action cards are playing.
Yeah, but so why I say sorcery, some of them have something lesson you have effects. To be played on your turn.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But anyway,
so that would be an example of a component.
I don't
action.
Know why we're using magic comparisons, but I love them. So carry on.
They apply to a lot of games.
Yeah.
This would be an example of a component action when the action card says action: do this.
So you would have to use
this component to perform an action.
Right.
So the secondary part of the politics card, you can spend a strategy token to draw two action cards. Number four is the construction tile, the primary ability. You may place one PDS or one space dock on a planet you control, and then you may place one PDS on a planet you control.
So space docks are your points of construction. You can only really build new units on planets where you have space docks. PDSs are a combination of anti-orbital gun batteries right. and planetary shields to protect your stuff from bombardment.
I'm not sure why I want to say this, but I feel like there should be a disclaimer that everything we are saying to you, while it is true and an accurate portrayal of the rules, understand that basically all of the 17 races, most all of them are going to break these
rules. Yeah, all the things are telling you right there.
These are the baseline rules. Yeah. There's going to be things
for
that break
example,
it.
Which is part of what I love about it.
Sure. There's a race that always goes first, regardless of what tile they take.
Right.
I mean, Jay gave us the example, you know, you're supposed to be, whoever took the leadership tile would be going first.
Right.
It's not completely true. Yeah. So just keep in mind that you need to
I just don't want you to feel that I got lied to when you experience the first joy of racial abilities.
The secondary ability of construction, you place one token from your strategy pool in any system. You may build either a space dock or a PDS. Next, we have trade. With trade, the primary, you gain 3 trade goods. You replenish your commodities, and then you choose any number of players. Those players may do the secondary for free. The secondary is that you replenish your commodities.
So commodities are something, each race has a commodity number.
Commodity stats.
Yeah, and it ranges, I think the lowest one is 2.
2 to 6.
2 to 6. Yeah. So when you replenish your commodities, you get these commodities on the sheet. Well, the commodities are supposed to be racial goods, basically goods that your race has in abundance, and they don't do you
any
good.
They're no good to you, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but you can use them to trade to other players. They turn into what's called trade goods, which is just straight up money right. In the game.
Trade goods can be spent as influence or resources.
Right. But the only way they're good to you is if you actually trade them to one of your
opponents.
And
when you refresh your commodities, let's say that I had 6 commodities and they got refreshed, it would stay at 6. You do not add 6 on. 6 is the cap
to your stat
that you have, and when it refreshes, it goes up to your stat. Before they're refreshed, you do have a chance to spend them if you so desire.
Trade them
if you're the active player.
Right.
And so with these commodities, if you are...
And I will say, for those that have played before, this is probably one of the most interesting changes.
It's a good change.
I like it a lot.
I did too. Of course, the traitor race, but...
Yeah.
We'll get into the traitor race. More on that later.
Quiet you. So in order to do trades, you have to be considered neighbors with a...
With whoever you're trying
to
transact with.
Yeah,
basically you have to be controlling adjacent systems. So at the start of the game, unless there's some sort of special ability, nobody's neighbors.
Right.
And then also at the end, or later on, once Mechatol Rex gets taken over and the agenda phase starts happening, everyone is considered neighbors during the agenda phase. And you can do transactions then. So next we have warfare. We'll get into this a little bit more during the action phase on how it works. But basically, a system, a lot of times you can do one thing with a system,
mm-hmm.
and then it's done for that turn.
And everything that's in it is essentially done for that turn.
It's stuck right, there and exhausted, done, whatever.
Right.
And so with warfare, basically it lets you ready that system again and the stuff in that system so that... Well, not the planets, but the
you take your command token off of the system, which basically unactivates it, so the ships right. can move again. You can perform other actions, and then it returns that command token to your pool.
Then, in the secondary ability, you spend one token to do production at the space dock on your home
one
system.
Strategy token, and the key part of this one is that strategy token doesn't get put in the system, so you actually get to build without activating the system,
right? And potentially move the stuff out in the same turn.
I don't feel like I took good enough advantage of that.
You sure didn't.
Part of the problem is that it requires you to build in your home system.
Right. Yeah.
And that gives
sometimes it's good to defend your home system.
Yeah,
though.
Sometimes it's pretty important. But I'm just saying there's limited value when you can only build.
I am attempting to develop mind lasers right now. And NJ.
Let's go ahead and talk about technology then. Since maybe some technology would help you with it. So Twilight Imperium has a technology tree. It's not really a tree. It has a technology system.
It used to be a tree.
Yeah, it's more like parallel ladders.
Sure.
I'm going to call it a technology tableau.
You're dead.
There's four.
You know I hate that word.
You love fancy words, Josh.
I hate tableau, though. I hate that word so bad.
So there's four colors of technologies. There's green, yellow, blue, and red. and each of them kind of...
Red are like military, blue are like logistics and movement, mm-hmm. Yellow is economic, and green has to do with...
Life force stuff.
It binds us.
Action cards, command tokens,
and I think it was genetics? Was that what it was? Or biomantic, something like that.
So basically, when you go to get a technology, and the technologies give you really cool in-game effects, the technology will have a requirement. With the exception of each color has a baseline technology that has no requirement. And so if, for example, let's say there's a red technology I want, it may say that it may have two red symbols on it, and that will mean that in order to build this, I have to own two other red technologies.
Prerequisite red technologies, because some technologies, mostly the upgrades, probably all just the upgrades.
The ship upgrades don't go towards your prerequisites.
So this is another big change. So in addition to like those 16 base techs, and each race occasionally has unique techs to their race. You can also, each type of military unit has an upgrade card, and those upgrade cards don't provide you with a new science symbol to meet further requirements, but they do have their own requirements. Like for instance, the faction that I played, like if I want to upgrade my infantry, it required that I had two green technology symbols.
Okay, so with the technology on the primary, you may get one technology for free, and then you can spend 6 resources to get a second technology,
which is delicious.
The secondary is you spend a strategy token to spend 4 resources to get a technology,
which is apparently all I knew how to do last night.
Lagging behind in technology can be a very sad time. Technology is a very
Some of them are 7 game changers.
Technology and leadership are 2 of the most popular selections at the start of the selection round of the strategy card.
For good reason.
Yes, they're very strong. Then finally we have Imperial. The Imperial card, you may immediately score 1 public objective if you fulfill its requirements.
Okay, so this is a way for you to break the normal 1 public, 1 secret a turn and potentially score points ahead of the standard pace.
Like 3 to 4 in a turn, right? Yeah,
potentially,
yeah.
Then you gain 1 victory point if you control Mechatol Rex. Otherwise, draw 1 secret objective. The secondary ability, you can spend 1 token from your strategy pool to draw 1 secret objective. So on the secret objectives, you have a cap of 3, and that includes scored plus in your hand. So if you have 3 combined scored and in your hand and you draw another one, then you would pick one to discard.
You have to discard one before you draw the new one.
No, you see the new one and then discard. Correct. Yes.
So wait, if you say you had scored 3 and for some reason decided to draw another one,
you could draw one immediately,
lose the point, discard it.
That would be really weird. But carry on.
I mean,
very well.
That's the way the rules work.
Yeah.
Okay. So after everyone selects their strategy cards, then we go to the action phase. And in the action phase, this is the meat of the turn, starting with the person with the lowest strategy card, which will. Someone will likely have picked number 1, and we'll go there. You'll then do turn order based on the strategy card. One of the tips that we've found is helpful is to have some sort of talisman marking who the active player is. It can help speed up the game and know where things are at.
There can be trade discussions and diplomacy.
It's easy for the game to pause out.
Yeah, it's very easy people not to get sidetracked.
And forget who the active player is.
Yes.
More than any other game, this has the whose turn is it problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so
even with the most responsible experienced gamers
and with gamers who wouldn't normally pause on their turn. Right.
There are definitely times, like, for example, when you are researching technology or something where you're making big decisions and it's just going to take a little bit of time to figure out what you want to do. And sometimes people will spend that time and then make their decision and not say that they're done and try not to do that.
I think that anything that's simple to move, a ball would be a good example where you can basically toss it to the other person where they have control. It's in their hands. They know it's...
Basically the conch from Lord of the Flies.
Yes,
is what you
they
need.
Know that they're in control of the turn right now and they need to complete their action and then they need to pass it to the next person. So that is just that doesn't have anything to do with the game rules, but that's a tip from us.
It has worked very well for us.
Yeah.
Okay, so action phase. The first type of action is a tactical action. So you will take a command token from your tactical pool and place it into a system. And when you place it into the system, you go through a step of different things you can do. The first one is you do movement. So the system that you're activating, your ships each have different stats. And one of them will be a move stat. And your movement can move, let's say I was 2 systems away and I activate a system 2 away, that ship could move into the system that I activated. Ships that have a speed 1 that are in the circle around the one that I activated, they could move in
But you got to follow your fleet cap rules.
Yeah. So you correct. So
I will say that this particular mechanic right here is what most new players
stumble on.
Right.
Yeah. It takes a little while to get used to.
A lot of time people think, okay, I activate this system and I move stuff out of there. No, when you activate a system, that is the destination system.
Yeah, it's almost like you're placing
things from all over the board that have movement to get there can move into that system from different locations. So
it's almost like you're placing a beacon. And stuff is moving into that area.
That's the important system that you need to pay attention to. That's where everything's going to happen.
Right.
Things move to it.
So things move into it. Then if there are enemy ships there, you will have space combat. We'll get in space combat in a second. Then if there's enemy planets, you can do an invasion. And then finally, if you have a space dock there, you can build stuff. And your production is equal to the resource number on your planet the space dock's on plus 2. So if
That's refers to how many different units can be built during their production. Right. So, for instance, if I have a space dock on a planet that has a resource value of 3, I can only build 5 things there, and it doesn't matter if it's 5 dreadnoughts or 5 fighters.
Right.
Okay. So strategic actions we've already kind of gone over. It's basically spending from your strategy pool in order to do the secondary abilities on.
It's flipping your strategic card. Sorry.
Doing the primary card and giving the rest of the table the opportunity to do the secondary.
And then finally you go to once everyone has, used their strategy card and finished with all their actions and passed, it keeps going around until once you pass, you cannot hop back in, you're out of the action.
It is important to note that though, once you pass, you are still allowed to perform the secondary actions on strategy cards.
Once everybody's passed,
the action phase is over.
The action phase, yes. And then you go to the status phase. The status phase, the first step is you score objectives, your secret objectives, and your public objectives.
One more thing about the action phase. There's a third type of action, which is
the component.
Yeah, we talked about it. Component action.
We didn't talk about it there during the action phase. But there's, so there's 3 types of action. There's something that allows you, a component that allows you to take an action.
Usually either a racial ability or something. Yeah.
When it's your turn, you will pick from those 3 types of actions and do one of them until you decide you're done with all of the actions, then you pass.
Yep.
So in the status phase, you score objectives. You can score 1 public objective. You can score 1 secret objective. They are scored in initiative order,
which is very important at the end of the game.
I've almost never seen it not matter.
Always matters.
At the end of the game, initiative.
It was
order
the decision that broke me on the last round.
I mean, it matters in almost every game ever played.
Mentally, it broke me.
Sure.
I'm a shattered man.
And so at the start of the game, there's 2 revealed public objectives. Then in every status phase, you reveal 1 more public objective for you to start working towards trying to score, etc. Then you draw action cards. The base is that you draw 1 card that can get modified. You remove command tokens that are on the board. So anything that's been placed, been activated
for any reason.
And just to go back real quick on the tactical actions, it's important to note, kind of like what we said before, but just to reemphasize, when you place down that tactical command token and you move stuff into that system, they are stuck in that system for the rest
until that command token is removed.
Basically, ships and units cannot move out of a system that has one of your command tokens in it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
And I'll just mention, you said, we're about to get there, but we take them off the board, and then they go to reserve, and then you get 2 out of your reserve, and they go back onto
your pools.
3 pools.
And you can adjust your pools at that point.
So I don't know if you guys have been paying attention thus far, but that's 2 tokens. You had 2 tokens you're getting back.
To do actions with.
To do all the actions and the secondaries here. That's why it's the most important resource to manage.
So next, you ready cards, which basically unexhaust them. You repair your units. Some of the units can sustain damage, which basically means they have 2 hit points. And so if it gets there, then it will get repaired. And then the strategy tiles go back in the middle. So then the last phase of the game is an optional phase. Well, it's not optional. An event has to be triggered for this to
begin.
Start. So in the center of the table is Mechatol Rex. If you go to Mechatol Rex, there is a custodian's token on there. In order to remove it, you must spend 6 influence, and you must land a ground force. And if you do, then...
Basically the equivalent of a military coup with support from...
The custodian.
You gain Mechatol Rex. It has...
You get a point for removing the custodian.
You get 1
too,
production and 6 influence,
right?
Which is what that plant produces, which is fantastic. And then, as Josh says, it you get a permanent victory point for being the person,
first person there
who too. Yeah, who swayed the custodians,
right?
Yeah.
Yep.
So after Mechatol Rex gets taken over, the agenda phase gets added on to the end of every turn. So in the agenda phase, you draw one law or one agenda. And then vote on it.
And there's basically two flavors. You have laws, which are permanent effects, and right. then you have directives, which are like one-time effects.
Right.
And then once that's resolved, you draw a second one and resolve it. And the voting, each player, so your planets refresh in the status phase. The only thing you're voting with is the influence of your planets.
On your planets, right.
And the speaker will be the person to read the law, and then the person to his left will start the voting. During the voting, you can do deals, try to bribe, try to threaten, do all sorts of shenanigans.
All of the cajole, yes.
I don't think Jay used the correct word. I believe he said can. It should be should.
Yeah, should.
You will. yeah.
If you don't participate in the great game, you're going to lose.
I love this game so much.
this is my favorite aspect of the game.
So am I remembering, it's been long enough since we played a third edition game.
Before it didn't refresh.
What didn't refresh?
Well,
the planets didn't refresh. But there was was still an agenda phase. It didn't do two back in the day.
Yeah, it was just one.
Right?
Previously.
I believe that's the case.
I believe you could do two.
Was there a way to have two happen?
Well, on the political... We're getting off topic.
Right.
But the political
Don't
strategy,
go too far, right.
Political strategy card allowed you to start the voting then.
Oh, okay.
When the political card was used... I mean, Jay talked about it in this, and you actually look at the laws and you sort of order them in the deck and you set it up for later, but you don't do anything with it.
Okay.
In the old version, when you use the political card, that's what initiates the vote.
That's what I remember.
And I believe there was an option on it for the...
To do a second.
Okay. Well, I like this system quite a bit. It's like Galactic Christmas.
I do
like,
too.
You're waiting for the agenda phase to come so you can see what glorious madness is being wrecked on the galaxy.
It's important to note that your planets were fresh in the status phase. You go to the agenda phase, you have all of your planets to vote with, and then at the agenda phase, all of your planets are going to refresh again. So
I believe it is also important to note here, and this is a big thing for this, is while trade goods can normally be spent as influence,
right.
you cannot spend trade goods as influence
votes.
For
as
votes.
Votes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So everyone will vote. It'll get to the speaker, and if there's a tie, the speaker breaks the tie.
Right.
You may use trade goods, commodities. You can use promissory notes. You can have...
Sometimes you can use action
there's,
cards.
There's binding and non-binding
agreements,
transactions.
Right.
The binding ones are things that would happen immediately. A non-binding agreement is one where you're promising to do something in the future.
They're my
and
favorite
And they're also
kind.
Not... They're not binding, meaning you don't necessarily have to keep your promise.
It's exactly what it means.
I will mention that because these votes happen two in a row, the first one, anything you spend on the first one won't be available
won't
to you
have
on the
right.
second one.
For the second. Right,
right.
Which makes it very hard to decide how much to
yes,
spend on
exactly.
the first. Well, and for the agenda phase, I mean, gives a pretty big advantage. I mean, if you have to the person who picked the politics
right,
knows
what the two potential laws
right,
might be.
Right.
Okay, so then, again, in the status phase, if the first person who scores 10 points at any point, then they are the person to win the game.
Wins immediately.
Yeah, like if that happened from a vote or something like that, then...
Yes.
Yeah.
Real quick, let's go through space combat and invasion. So if there's a space combat, you go through multiple steps. The first step is anti-fighter barrage. One of the common strategies... So basically, when we're fighting back and forth, I'll roll dice and I'll generate hits. And then at the end of the round, my opponent will assign those hits. And so...
To the things he wants
them to go to.
Right.
And so a common strategy is to have kind of a screen...
A fighter screen.
Of... fighters that are there to soak damage because they're cheap, etc. So the anti-fighter barrage is before combat, destroyers have a once per combat pot shot that can only hit fighters.
And they roll typically two dice.
Two dice,
right.
right.
For
until
that,
until they get upgraded.
Destroyer.
The, the upgrades are slightly different depending on the race.
Yeah. And it's important to notice that the anti-fighter barrage, the space combat, and the bombardment rolls cannot be modified.
By cards, racial abilities, techs, or anything.
Right.
There are techs that modify.
Okay.
Them.
Yeah.
But,
that's
but
true.
Things that modify combat roles do not modify these roles.
Right. So then either player may choose to announce a retreat. Basically, you need to retreat into a nearby system, and it has to be one that you control or have models in. And if you do, then you will do one round of combat, and then after that,
whatever survives.
You announce retreats at the beginning of combat. You complete them at the end of the combat round.
Correct. So then on your, you do your combat rolls. The combat rolls start with...
And it's D10s.
Yeah, it's D10s.
And you need to roll over a target number based on the ship firing.
Equal to or over.
Hit.
Right.
Yeah. So, for example, the War Sun has... it says combat 3, and then it has 3 dots next to it. That means that it's going to roll 3 dice. Each of them needs to roll a 3 or higher in order to generate a hit. When you roll your dice, you're supposed to start with your low dice first, working up. And it says in there whether the attacker or defender is supposed to go first. I can't remember
defender's
which.
Defender's supposed to go first. And then...
But it's kind of simultaneous, but it can matter.
Yeah, you assign the hits simultaneously, so...
I don't think you assign them simultaneously, but they don't get assigned until after all the
dice. Right. You both do all your rolls and then the hits get assigned.
Right. Yeah.
So the hits get assigned and then the round will end. If there was a retreat declared, then if there are ships remaining, the retreat will happen. If not, then it just keeps going until one side kills the other.
Right.
You go through the core of the round. You don't go back down and fight a barrage.
Correct.
You go through the
you can still announce retreat again. You
attacker, defender retreats, and then you repeat that process until someone is eliminated or someone retreats.
So then the next type of combat is invasion. So this is where you're landing ships onto a planet that has some ground forces. The first step is bombardment. There's some ships that have the bombard ability.
War Suns and Dreadnoughts.
Yeah.
Mostly.
Some flagships do as well, I think. Yeah. And basically, this is sort of like the Anti-Fighter Barrage. It's a once-per-game ability where you...
Once per round.
Once per invasion.
Mm-hmm. Invasion. Mm-hmm. And you roll those, and they get removed, and then you proceed with the invasion. Or it can just be a bombard without invasion as well. So you commit...
Without landing a troop.
Important to note that PDS systems protect your planets from bombardment.
Most of the time.
Most of the time.
There are ways to get past that as well.
The War Sun ignores it.
Yeah.
Right.
So the attacker commits their ground forces, and then basically you just fight back and forth until one side's dead.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah,
there's no retreating from ground combat.
There's no retreating from invasions. You commit your dudes after bombardment, and then you fight to the death.
Right.
Yeah. If you wanted to retreat, you should have had something in the sky to pick you up and take you away in the retreating of the space combat step.
Yes.
Really about the
and only then rinse other, repeat. Right.
Yeah. About the only other. Thing in here I'm seeing that we didn't go over is that some of the planets will have planet types. They don't really matter, except it'll be
certain cards refer to it.
A public objective that says, you have to have 3 industrial planets or something. Yeah. And then there's also some that have technology specialties. And so it'll have the technology
color
on the card. And if you're wanting to research a technology that where you don't meet the requirements for, you can exhaust the planet that has that technology specialty in order to remove or count towards one of the required technologies.
Right. Okay.
So let's go ahead and discuss changes from TI3 to TI4.
Oh my gosh!
So let's start off with trade.
Yeah, trade's a big change. Trade and agenda are the two biggest changes.
Actually, I have a...
I think politics is a real big one.
Tech. There's a lot. There's
warfare.
Yeah, there's a lot. Yeah, okay, so...
Okay, you're right. Just walk through the strategy cards and we'll say if there's a change or not, really.
So, trade, previously, there was... You would set up, trade agreements, and if you attacked each other, then the trade agreements would get broken.
Right.
And basically, they gave...
They gave you extra
economy
income.
While they were active.
So, with... In this one, there's the commodity system. I think that all four of us are in agreement that the commodity system is fantastic.
It's slick.
I feel like it's less clunky. It's more versatile. Mm-hmm. And it also forces. I mean, we're all rivals at the table.
Yeah.
But between trade and politics, you are forced to interact positively with your direct.
You
got to
work together sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that there's some interesting mechanics with it. I won't say that it's strictly better, but I will say that it is better enough that any qualms I have with it, I can set aside. Because overall, it's better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We mentioned before that there was kind of an elaborate technology tree before. Now that's not the case.
Yeah,
you could lay it out as a tree.
It's much more streamlined.
It's basically a ladder for each color fence.
Yeah,
and you're going straight up.
Yeah, but I mean, my point is that there are some texts that have multiple requirements, though.
Sure,
so.
But they're actually pretty rare. Right. I actually ordered.
It's usually racial.
Only the racial text and the units. Right?
Really?
Like
yeah. Otherwise, multicolored.
Each color has a 0, 1, 2, and 3 requirement.
Okay.
Yeah, I actually ordered.
That's my point.
Ordered my deck by color.
If you laid it out, so it's really not a tree. It's a grove. It's kind of grove, there are trees.
Jim's right, it's a ladder. Work your way up the ladder.
Okay, so next change, previously, PDS units and space docks were something that you constructed by spending resources.
Yeah, they cost you resources. Now you spend, to build them just like a ship.
Right. Now you spend the construction tile.
Yeah, during the construction.
The strategy. Or a strategy token as right. the on the secondary.
Which I think is a great change.
Yeah.
I love that change a lot.
I think I didn't grok it early enough in the game
last
night.
One of the nice things is that you can... I don't know. Having to, it seems like it's easier to build out in a far-flung system.
Yeah, because you can much get a space dock out farther and then use it to build, you know, ships and troops to defend it right away. Yeah. Right? I mean, that's what you're suggesting.
I mean, there's lots of things that I like better about.
Yeah. Well, it will activate the system
to build the space.
The construction secondary does. Yeah. The token.
But if you're doing the primary,
no, I meant the primary. Yeah.
If you do the primary, you can build out at your frontier, build a space dock, and then.
And then build stuff on
build
the space
stuff
dock,
that
which was
turn.
Not very easily done
right.
in the previous version.
Yeah, not at all.
So the biggest change, and probably in our opinion the best change, is the way that politics work. Previously it happened with there was a political strategy tile, and you would vote when that was activated. Now, I love the it being at the end of the turn, and I love that you refresh your planets, vote, and refresh them again.
Yeah, so one of the key tactics to try to win the political war in previous version was to hold on to the politics card until late in the round, trying to get people to spend their planets as much as possible so they would have minimal number of votes. And it was one of the things
and
you
it was very
manage.
Effective.
Yeah, it was very effective.
Yeah, because people would end up having to spend those planets to build...
You have to get command tokens.
Buy tokens and things like that. And those planets would all be exhausted, and then finally you'd get to the end of the turn, and that the politics player would be like, boom, now it's time to vote for the agenda.
Yeah.
And
it'd
I
be
have
like,
enough that
I've
I'll
vote, I've got 9 votes and the
on
rest
a vote
of, the table
of 3-0.
Yeah.
And so that was somewhat frustrating sometimes, because you would literally run out of opportunities to continue stalling. Like on your turn, you'd run out of tokens, you'd run out of actions, you'd run out of things to do, and you'd basically end up having to pass. Or end up spending all your planets and not having any votes. That's all gone. Everybody gets to contribute up to whatever they've taken over on the board.
Yeah, so it feels like it ends up having a lot more of the actual, like, wheeling and dealing, like, human.
Everyone's more involved.
Yeah, absolutely. We haven't really talked about the promissory notes, but each player has, there's 4 generic promissory notes, and then there's 1 racial promissory note. And you have these are like bargaining chips that you can offer to other players, and then that other player can then cash that in and return it to you later for
it's some funny, because really what bonus. They are, I mean, they're contracts, like, hey, we're going to not have, you know,
it's,
we're
it,
going
it,
not
it,
fight
it's
at
way,
some
it's
point in time,
to have
or
long-term
you're going
to
not vote
at
some point in time, point in time, but, you know, yeah.
You're going to give me all your commodities.
Yeah, they're pretty interesting.
Then one of the other, this is a little bit more subtle, maybe, a change, but I think one that was very important for the game.
Imperial?
Warfare not giving +1 movement anymore?
Yeah, that's a change.
It's been buffed. If you have fast ships, you can move. Like, if you had speed 3 ships, move 3. Warfare them, move 3 more. That was never possible before.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
The Imperial strategy card. Previously, you would play the Imperial strategy card and you just score a victory point. Now you have to own Mechatol Rex in order to score the victory point.
It was score
2. Or...
Oh, 2, right.
Oh, it was score 2.
Yeah, it was 2 victory points. It was.
So the only way to score 2 now is to own Mechatol Rex and have a public objective you can achieve.
I think you could still score the public objective
in the old Imperial
as well.
Oh. Yes, you could.
Oh, really?
Which is disgusting.
Yeah, so you could get 3.
You guys don't remember it very well. At least you don't remember it, because they put out a second set of strategy cards with one of these expansions.
I do remember that vaguely,
and we never used the old Imperial card after.
Oh. Yeah.
But the original Imperial card was just immediately score 2 victory points. It was a clock.
So bad.
Jeez.
It was a clock that went boom, 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 game's over.
Huh.
If people actually used it and played it, the game would end
really fast.
Way quick.
Yeah.
For a game that lasts 6 hours.
So is this one, this is even a change from this second set?
From, absolutely. Yeah. I can't remember what the Imperial card was in the expansion. It doesn't
matter.
I think
Jay was kind of looking it up.
But
anyway,
it's different.
It's improved is the point.
Well
yes, in my opinion, yes.
And even if you don't have Mechatol Rex, the opportunity and the secret objectives are way different as well. So like previously in third edition, you got dealt 2 secret objectives at the beginning of the game, kept 1, and the secret objectives were insanely difficult
and
worth
2
victory points apiece. Whereas in this, you start with 1. The secret objectives are easier. They're only worth 1 point apiece. But through either using the primary or secondary ability of the Imperial card, you can have a little bit of selection and score up to 3.
One of the most tilting things in the previous version on secret objectives was when something that should have been extremely difficult ended up randomly
just like randomly got dealt to somebody.
Randomly got dealt to somebody who was really easy for them.
Yeah.
I mean, that was...
Two points is 20% of the game.
Right.
Like,
right.
It's a big deal.
Right.
Okay, well...
So those are the changes.
Those are the changes. Let's go ahead and go in and...
On to the tail.
We'll talk
that's
about...
That's just the highlights of the changes. There's more.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Let's talk about the... game now. So we dealt out the races. We each got four to pick from. I got the Universities of Jalnar, the Winnu, the Necrovirus, and the Clan of Sar. I ended up...
totally thought you were going to take the virus.
I totally did too. I'm glad
that's
you did.
Way too aggressive for me. I am a peace-loving people. Yeah, I thought you knew this by now.
Yeah, that's true. Jay does like to go aggro with the technology. He likes universities or embers.
I took the universities... not a huge fan of any of the ones I got, but they're okay.
Yeah.
Scott, you got the Federation of Sol, the Embers of Muat, the...
Well, as soon as I dealt it out and I saw you got the Federation of Sol, I was like, well, I wanted to pick the damn thing up.
Yeah,
right.
Are we not
going to
do just like quick bullet points on the...
No. On the universities, basically, they're really good at researching technology. Yeah,
they get tech fast.
He sucks at fighting, but he starts with four technologies and has an easier time accumulating more.
Right.
Out of mine, I ended up picking the Federation of Sol because they generate additional command tokens and also have a fantastic ability where, as an action, I can spend a strategy to just clone two troops anywhere. It's a great soft pass.
Brutal.
Like I said, as soon as I know Scott well enough, and Mark in the third edition game, like this was his race. When I dealt them out and saw that his got dealt to him, I wanted to pick it up and give him a different one.
I really didn't even need to look at the other ones.
Okay, so Trevor, you had the Eksha Kingdom, the Gulls of Krius, the Astral Tribes, and the Barony of Letnev.
The Barony of Letnev should have been the choice I made. They've always been in third edition. They're very strong. In fourth edition, I don't think they've changed much. I think they're still extremely strong.
Yeah, they are.
That's probably what I chose, but
I probably would have picked the Ghost of Fire U just because they're cool and but
I never liked
they're
the
like
Gulls.
The kind of nomad eraser.
No,
they're the one their flagship they're like Nexus. Carries a. Wormhole with it.
Oh, yeah.
And all of the wormholes,
and
all of
the wormholes
are
linked to their flagship.
They have a where their starting planet would normally be.
Mm-hmm.
They have a wormhole there, and then they have their home planet off the
home
board.
Home planet is off the board.
And then if their ships start on a wormhole, they have plus one speed.
Nice.
I probably should have played them. I actually never played them in third edition. I watched people play them, and they just never really caught my interest. I think they were maybe a little more squirrely than I wanted to be. I kind of like to turtle up in my corner. fun.
You did.
And so I never really tried them. The one that I wanted to try, but I know they've been nerfed into Oblivion. I don't know about Oblivion, but they definitely got hit with the nerf stick, was the Tribes of Yasarl.
Sure.
They used to be able to basically pass or basically every other stall action would, every other action.
Right.
Now they have to discard a card to do it, which means it's very limited.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing. I mean, it was before it was broken.
It was
ridiculous.
Too good. Yeah, right.
Okay. And Josh, you had the Emrys of Hassan, the Yin Brotherhood, the Mentak Coalition, and the Arboric. And you selected the Emrys of Hassan.
I'm surprised you didn't take the Mentak.
I did consider them. I really ended up wanting the Emrys because their racial ability was that everybody's my neighbor. Always.
So
and I wanted to have my fingers in the pie as quick as possible. Like, I wanted to start wheeling and dealing, getting in people's heads.
I guess we sort of skipped over mine. Mine was, I picked the Eksha.
Oh, you
kingdom.
Said you'd like to turtle up.
But, so, yeah. They're space turtles. Their tech is they're kind of the. Their fluff is basically they're the political.
They're kind of the
political,
ambassadors.
They're super diplomatic.
Super diplomatic. They don't want to fight anybody.
Right.
They're very defensive to make sure no one attacks them. And they, their ability basically lets them throw away an agenda and move on to the next one.
Okay, so on round one, just some highlights. Scott, you took leadership. Josh took warfare. Trevor took technology, and I took trade. So the main benefits with these, Scott's going to be building up command tokens. Josh is going to be able to move in, take over a system, remove his command token, and then move out and take another system. Mm-hmm. And on the starting up in a four-player game, there's four systems around your home planet, and then after which are kind of your native lands. And then after that...
all bets are off.
It's kind of dicey on what you're going to be going towards. Trevor, technology is always a strong...
it's a strong early play. It's strong late play. I mean, it's always...
It's a little bit weaker maybe first turn just because it can be difficult to get the
six
resources for the second technology.
Right.
the reason,
but a free one without spending four and without spending a strategy token is definitely valuable.
Right, and I also got left the diplomacy. So we were playing with two because we were playing four players. We each had two strategy cards. I got the diplomacy card, which meant that I could refresh a couple of my plants to be able to get to the six resources to buy the second tech. I actually did get second tech on the first turn.
Right, yeah.
So.
And I took trade. The person who gets trade gets three
trade goods.
And I knew that I would be able to do, hopefully, a trade with Josh with my commodities. And so that's potentially going to net me seven trade goods, which is a pretty big deal on the first round.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's true.
So basically, we just expanded out on
that first round. Right. I mean, there was certainly some business deals struck. Conversations occurred.
Business deals started right off the bat.
Yeah, so that's what I was excited about, being everybody's neighbor.
Jay magnanimously and surprisingly opted, when he activated trade, to let everybody produce their commodities for free.
I think that's a pretty smart choice early on. It's not a good idea to start by pissing people off.
You don't want to make enemies on turn one. That's true.
It's interesting though, because he did that, but only I could trade with people, you know.
Like, right.
So, but it still, it did end up
seed the goodwill.
It gained the goodwill of the galaxy for right. sure. Absolutely.
One of the things that I was very happy with on my first turn was that Trevor did the technology card. I was able to get some of the blue cards, which increased my speed on my ships. Mm-hmm. I think I upgraded my carrier
that it could carry a troop,
so that it could move an extra at a distance.
Oh, interesting.
And then I gave one which lets one ship move one extra speed during an activation. So on my first turn, I jumped out of my ring of four into Abyss and Freya, two delightful high producing planets next to Mechatol Rex, and was very pleased with the
and then the conversation that started happening, because I was in range, because I also ended up with some blue tech early on,
right,
is, hey guys, do we want Jay to have Mechatol Rex, or would you like me to go in there? You know, those are the kind of conversations I just love. That's all.
Trevor, you said you felt like your start of the game was kind of crippled you a little bit.
So I'm going to, as a tactical tip to everybody who's in earshot, in Twilight Imperium, it is critical that when you have the opportunity to score victory points, that you do so up to the point where you are neck and neck with whoever's in lead. You may not want to get out in the lead, because there's no catch-up mechanic in this game, so being ahead is a good thing.
If you get too far ahead, then the universe...
Yeah. Other than the wrath of the rest of the table.
The catch-up mechanic is the rest of the table is going to beat the shit out of you.
Yeah, it's boycotts, it's blockades.
Nobody will trade with you. So
everyone will attack you.
The way to win is to slowly build up victory points at the same pace as everybody else, but build up a fireball that when you get within two or three from the end, you shoot out ahead, and you get to the point where there's nothing they can do.
Where you hit 10 and nobody can stop you.
They can't stop you. You've got to be in a position where they can't stop you. If you try too early, they will stop you, and you'll come up short. And if you lag too far behind, then you can't catch up at the key moment.
Right.
And one of the things I think that's important to understand about the game is that a lot of people see the components, see the game, and they're like, "Oh, this looks like Space Risk."
Please don't ever say that again.
you need to be so careful.
If you say Space Risk and Tableau to me. Well, I'll still be your friend, because you'll play Twilight Imperium. It will be strange.
Pass the test, Josh.
That's true. But really, you need to be... All of your energies need to be focused at the start of the game. You need to be building up your economy, building up your resources, etc.
And you also improving your ships, your tech.
Your actions need to be moving towards being able to score the objectives.
Your
secret objectives.
You can't forget the objectives. You need to be moving towards them. Well, I made an error. We were working with new strategy cards that did something quite a little bit different than the previous ones, and I'd skimmed the one diplomacy card, which ended up being sort of okay, but it ended up screwing my turn up. So what ended up happening was I moved out of my home planet into a couple of planets that were
still on the edge of the galaxy.
They were on the edge of the galaxy, and they were somewhat mediocre. It wasn't moving me towards the center of the board. But in my mind, I thought that the diplomacy was going to allow... It said refresh planets, and for some reason, my mind translated that as
refresh
the system, basically be able to move out of the system.
Right.
And so I moved into the system thinking that with my diplomacy card, I was going to be able to move out and move closer to like what all you guys were doing.
You basically thought it was going to do warfare.
I was thinking I was going to get into the center like everyone else, and I was going to get some extra planets. And I didn't worry about building a second carrier, which would have made this all possible if I'd done that as well. But, you know, my entire turn sort of focused. And by the time I'd figured out what had happened, I had already, like, my first action was to move out of my home system into that. And so at that point, As soon as I figured it out, it was too late, and I had to completely shift gears. Well, the problem is now I have two planets that weren't as good as the ones I should have got, which means I'm behind on resources and influence. And I had to kind of scramble to actually get the two techs, and I didn't have enough influence to buy command tokens, and my Iowa's command tokens starved the whole game.
Just a clever possum playing ruse to decorate.
I will admit that this is a harsh game, and that if you make against people who know the game well and you make those sort of mistakes early,
people leave you alone.
It puts you behind, and you have a hard time ever catching up.
If it's a game where there are veterans playing with new players, I definitely recommend. There's so many rules that they need kind of a basic overview.
Right.
But I feel like you should just jump into the game.
And let them Scooby-Doo a lot.
You should like kind of tell them, okay, I think you should do this because of XYZ. And don't be the type of player who's guiding them as a puppet.
Right.
to do your own names.
Right.
I do have one bone to pick with you, Josh Wheeler.
Oh, only one.
Well,
a successful evening. Is it one for this round, for this galactic cycle? Oh, okay. Correct. Lay it on me. Bring it.
So, you and your infinite wisdom decided to. You took politics. You did not take speaker for yourself. You did a transaction with one Scott Ray.
Yes.
Where you made him speaker and
basically let him have leadership twice in a row. Right.
Which allowed him to have.
It allowed me to get leadership twice in a row.
Which destroyed all the rest of us.
Right.
In my defense,
please. I tried to justify this horrible thing.
I was basically trying to buy Trevor's long lasting friendship and alliance.
And I was stupid enough to try to buy yours back.
And he basically convinced me not to give him the speaker because it would have made
that was that was picking. That was weird that he the Trevor's like it's really a bad idea for you
to
give it to me
because
like, you would have been last.
I like rolled up in a stroller with candy and I'm like, hey, take this candy from me.
The lesson of the story is you should have took the fucking thing for yourself.
I thought that's what you were going to do. You were looking for somebody to pay you is the problem.
Yes, I wanted money.
Your love of money blinded you for what was good for everyone at the table.
I mean, money is good, though.
Money is good.
I assumed that when I told you it was
probably... You and I had a very mutually beneficial
arrangement
going on in
the early
game. I agree,
for the first several galactic cycles.
I was trying to build a relationship of trust with my opponent, who I thought was going to take the speaker for himself, putting me in second.
I think I even said it this galactic cycle. I was a space contractor. I needed documents and hard money to make things happen.
And we made it happen.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so we go to the next.
By we, he means them.
Yeah. We go to the next round. Scott again takes
nice
leadership.
Speaker. Yeah, so I take leadership again.
Josh does warfare. Trevor does technology. I do trade. We do basically.
It is a rinse and repeat of the previous round in many, many ways.
Yeah, yes. Kind of.
I think those four were identical.
Oh, were they?
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. I think they were probably...
The first four.
I mean, honestly, I was... Well, my pick... I'm not defending my pick, but like I picked politics twice in a row because one of my secret objectives was to discard 5 action cards.
And that was,
and that was the quickest way to get action cards. Yeah.
Sure. So.
No, I don't think that you made a mistake with that.
Right, yeah. No,
the mistake was the previous
round. Right, yeah, I understand.
Especially because
you could have done the secondary politics.
You not only
with
got
the
paid, but you
got.
Earned yourself a staunch ally.
Until the stabbing occurred.
So, we in this round, one of the things that's interesting is that
you'd claimed McTarrex.
No, we're both near McTarrex, Josh
right.
and I.
Right.
And Josh is like, Jay, I want McTarrex. What you give me to not take it over? And I'm like, well, usually you cannot trade action cards. The Emirates of Hassan. One of the racial abilities that you can trade action cards. So I trade him 2 action cards for a commodity and for Josh to not attack Mechatol Rex.
Again, I wanted the action cards for my secret objective.
So I attack Mechatol Rex. I think that you didn't realize that the victory point.
That it was worth a victory point.
I didn't realize
that it was worth a victory point.
I did
either.
Sell that too lightly.
You were getting to a victory point to give him a victory point.
Yeah, that's true.
But so I moved in. I took over Mechatol Rex. The universe rejoiced. Scott, you were going to say something about your strategies.
Oh, I mean, early game, I mean, especially with the fantastic economic deals that had on, like, so Josh and I actually ended up trading several promissory notes and commodities back and forth with each other as well, kind of de-incentivizing us from attacking each
right.
other. Like, we didn't really ever have to draw borders between us. There was just kind of some understanding.
The galactic Dow Jones on our side of the galaxy was just going
up. But because of that, and because my faction starts with 2 carriers, has a really easy time putting extra ground forces on, can spend the strategy tokens to kind of stall. all and see what people are doing. I mean, by the end of round two, I had every single planet in my quarter of the board.
Right.
The whole kit and caboodle.
And I was apprehensive about all these promissory notes going on with Josh and Trevor, or Josh and Scott. One of the ones they changed, which blew my mind that they did this at this point, was one you can trade one support for the throne where it you each score a victory point, and then if you...
Well, the person who gains the promissory note scores a victory point.
Right.
They traded those two,
right.
giving
right.
each of them victory points.
Right,
right. And then if you and later if you, activate a system with that person's units in it,
you have
you
to
lose
back.
A point and give them back the promissory note.
Right.
Yeah. Very de-incentivizing.
And I will say this
for attack.
Jay tried to convince me to go in with basically a similar deal. One of the problems at a four-player game is that when two people start dealing, the other two people start feeling left out and want to try to deal.
Only because those two people were dealing because two other people, and I'm pointing at Trevor here, wouldn't ever seem to come to a freaking deal.
I didn't want to.
Every time
sides.
I brought my contract, you were like, "Well, let me have my space guy. Lawyers review this.
Take
you
a
know?
Side. I was cash Josh Wheeler's paycheck.
I was trying to be friends with all, and it failed.
And honestly, I was in a situation where I didn't want to do any type of
deals yet.
No, I would be happy with deals. I didn't want to I didn't want to expand any. I mean, I had Mektar Rex. I had Abyssin Freya. I had my four systems around me. I cannot ask for more.
One of the things that I find interesting about the change from third to fourth,
mm-hmm.
one of the things I hate about the Emirates in third edition was their trade contracts gave their friends lots of money
mm-hmm.
instead of them. They were supposed to be the big traders. They were the ones supposed to be making money, and they never did. They gave everybody else lots of money. And with you getting four goods now, four commodities that
six.
You can trade.
Six.
Six commodities. It means you can trade for things back up to potentially, you know, six, seven, eight trade goods back
right.
or value of. Which now makes the Emirates the one...
feel like superior.
Yeah. Yeah, like I was getting like, paid, right.
Right, whereas that's not the way it felt in third edition.
Yeah. And Jay's right, the pitfall was that greed blinded me in the end.
That's fair, yes. Yeah. So the next round...
No, we need round to talk three. About,
oh, so this about is the first agenda phase, right?
First agenda phase.
Oh, okay, all right.
Here comes the revisionist history.
Yeah, there's nothing revisionist
the
about
victor
it.
Writes the history
so,
books.
So Trevor's on the opposite side of the galaxy of me, okay? And I have, you know, I've been doing a lot of
basically
trade.
Everyone's trying to... Everyone that does not like me currently.
There's a reason for
it's
that.
A bit of a meta... It's a meta problem, too.
What is rule number one of Twilight Imperium, Jay? What's rule number one of Twilight Imperium?
Jeff always lies.
No.
That's two.
Rule number two. Oh, that's rule number two.
Number one is never listen to Jay.
Rule number one, never listen to Jay.
Never. That might be true.
And you bum rushed to Mechatol Rex.
You were in
your usual
position.
Fashion. So, yeah. Okay. So anyway, I had been trying to bring Trevor, like Trevor and I weren't competing over anything really. Like I was interested
I wasn't competing with anybody because right. I had a bad start to the point where everybody had taken the line of battle had been drawn way farther closer to me than I'd hoped for.
Right.
Because you were kind of boxed.
Because everybody expanded really fast.
Right. Yeah. And because I, like I said, made a mistake on my first turn putting me in a position where I'd moved the wrong direction from where I should have.
Right. Right. So with the trades and with a couple of the action cards that I had received, I had gotten, I had traded a few commodities and action cards back and forth with Josh and was interested in doing the same thing with Trevor. So I had one action.
Which I had to facilitate.
It's true. And you know,
I did swimmingly.
I'm grateful
say,
for that.
Yeah,
you profited.
My fee was completely reasonable.
Absolutely. So I had two cards. One of the cards allowed me to basically, when an agenda got revealed, I could play my card, abstain from the vote, but I basically called
you had to declare the
predict
winner.
The winner.
I had to predict the winner, and if I guessed right, I got three more command tokens.
Right,
which would have
been all of your
basically
command
11
tokens.
Command tokens yes. ahead of everybody
right.
else.
Right,
and then part of this trade deal was I gave Trevor a card that he could play for five votes.
Right,
and so I'm like, okay, I'm just going to wait for an agenda that I know Trevor's interested in. I'm going to call my shot. I've already given the ammunition to lock in the result that he wants, and we're both going to be happy. And then
the agenda comes up. The agenda is vote a person. So we're going to pick one of the four people at the table, and whoever wins takes the card. And the card allows you to basically trade it in at a point later in the game for another vote a person vote, in which you just basically win
you
that
declare
vote.
That they're, yeah, they're, the winner.
On a future elect a person, you just automatically decide.
Just automatically decide. Say, I'm going to take that. I win it.
Right.
So at this point, I'm
so I feel like Trevor's behind.
I'm clearly right. behind. So I'm the safe choice because I'm not threatening anybody else to win the game. So we, the three of us, Scott, myself, and Wheeler here, all say, well, we're going to vote for Trevor.
I don't remember saying that.
Yes, you did.
Yeah,
you,
see, this
yeah,
is the you did. Jay, yes. This is the revision's history right here. See.
They did change the conditions.
No, the conditions changed after we all said that. Then Scott played his card.
Yeah, the condition changed after I played my card.
Yes, everyone would. I would have voted for you as well, Trevor, before Scott plays his card. There's actually a fair number of these action cards.
Yeah,
in the
these
deck,
predict cards, which
where
are cool.
you predict an
yeah,
agenda.
I love them.
And they, when you play them, you can't vote, and it can totally like it can be a poison pill on
yeah.
the vote.
Oh,
that
yeah.
you're like sometimes like even if you don't want the secondary objective, you'd be like, oh, I don't want this person to get it, so I'm going to predict it for them so they don't get it.
The thing is it was only 3 command tokens on a guy who
yeah,
was...
fuck Scott.
He already had so many of them. Why did you want him to have more?
Because it didn't matter. Here's the funny thing about it. During the vote, I said, quote, this probably won't even matter because there'll probably never be an agenda that will even come up that where that card will even matter.
Right.
And Jay ended up winning it after this vote because I voted for me. Jay voted for himself. Scott can't vote. And Wheeler backstabbed me and voted
no.
for Jay.
Mm-hmm. No.
The contract.
He just yeah. abstained.
I did abstain. That's right. Yeah. Which, see, that's not a backstab.
All that it takes for evil to prosper.
All right.
But I was prophetic. It never got used the whole game.
That's true.
That was Jay's choice.
From that point, Josh and Scott's relations became a little bit rocky. Scott bore a grudge.
We still,
I don't think
we
transacted very much after that.
I mean, we still did a few trade goods, and yeah. and there weren't open hostilities.
Sure.
I just didn't realize that your loyalty was dependent upon other people in the conglomerate loyalty not getting something.
Space contractor.
There were deals
the clause,
in place.
The clause had changed. Clauses had changed.
That is definitely yeah, the see. Deal did change.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
So for anybody who plays with Josh Wheeler in the future, a longstanding
only when
history,
I'm the Emirates of Hassan,
a longstanding
no.
history of mutual beneficial agreement.
You need to, okay.
Is irrelevant to the
you need
landscape
to understand.
Of the deal.
For me too, I guess. If you play an action card that changes the circumstances of the vote, then we will need to renegotiate again.
The part I don't understand is there was a reason why we didn't want to vote Jay in. He was leading the game at that point. He had a perfect board position. And you're like, you know what?
He was on Mecha.
Screw that. I'm going to screw both of my friends on both sides of the table here. I'm going to give it to the man who's out in the head.
I had plans for Jay. Let's talk about signal jamming.
Next okay,
round.
So we start the next round. Josh inexplicably put signal jamming
turn one.
On Mechatol Rex, which makes me put a command token for my supply, put it on Mechatol Rex, which means I'm not going to be able to go in there.
Right. Yeah. Can't move stuff in
not
or
gonna
out.
Be able to defend it, can't get out of it. Yeah.
Josh then moves some ships over to block a wormhole. Scott has Imperial this turn, so he builds up his forces. He goes into... Kay. We actually end up... it becomes obvious that Scott is going to go into Mechatol Rex
okay.
and score 3 points this turn.
Well, right. hold on here. Okay. And this is a big point here. Cause I mean, I am set up. I've had such a good trades and development early round
right.
that it's like, I basically am in a position where I could very easily take a commanding lead this turn.
Right.
But I don't want to do that this early in the game because I know exactly what happens
yeah,
when people do that.
Your
right.
Opponent.
The whole
right.
table turns on you and you
right.
get beat down. So my plan was actually to build up and go through the wormhole that you blockaded.
Nobody
to,
discussed
to try
the wormhole
and
with me.
To try and
nobody
score.
Discussed
but
it.
It's true.
But if he tells you that he wants to go through the wormhole, now his card's
right.
on the table.
Then
you need to understand that
space
everybody can't tell you all of their plans.
It also makes... if you guys had privately discussed it, it could have worked, but he didn't want Trevor and I knowing that he wants to come over to this side of the table.
Right.
Right.
Right. So, I absolutely didn't want him coming over to that side of the table.
Yeah, rightfully so. And so, I mean, my plan was to, plan A was
right.
to slow roll for 1, maybe 2 points this turn,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
just continue entrenching, let people be satisfied with the territories that they've got. I mean, the planets that I was going for were unoccupied
right.
at this point.
Right.
But nope, you blocked the wormhole.
I had secret objectives.
Immediately after Black, you know, stabbing me in the back the previous turn.
Which you hadn't discussed with him, but I, hey, really, seeing here is that Josh is a fickle, or that Scott is a fickle partner to be engaged with.
I agree.
Whoa. Yeah,
I get called the wild card, but I think...
Well, you are a wild card.
you are a wild card.
I love that Jay has continued to manipulate this table even hours after the board is over.
Even after the game is over.
So,
okay.
So you signal jam me in Mechtar Rex.
Right.
It becomes obvious that Scott wants to go into Mechtar Rex. We don't want him scoring those points.
It becomes obvious that Scott that is my only avenue to actually score points.
That's not true.
Yeah, fair. It was.
Well, to score more than one.
It was going to be 3 points or zero.
Sometimes for me. It's okay to score zero.
I don't think so.
I had already scored zero once.
I believe we talked about that at the beginning. Yeah. It is not okay.
All right. So we decided that the best plan is for Josh to attack Mechtar Rex, which he does, and he sends in a fighter and a carrier.
Right. And a ground troop.
And he needs two nines in order to kill my dreadnought
on D10.
He gets them, of course.
Yep.
So
it was my only good roll of the game.
So I don't retreat.
That put a huge old smile on my face.
Yeah.
By the
way. Yeah. So you go in there, and the whole reason why we're doing this is
Keystone
so that
cops right here, the two of you beating each other up to give Scott Mechtar Rex was awful.
He was going to take it anyway. I mean, this was, in my opinion, the correct play.
The reason that it mattered is because when Scott came to attack me for Mechtar Rex, he would lose my support of the throne card.
He would lose a victory point.
So I understand, but the whole thing just ended up being like...
Yeah, it could be sacks.
Yes.
So...
Starting with the basic signal jam.
Yeah, so Scott succeeds. He scores three. He's in a dominating position. I've built a war sun on my home planet, and it looks like there cannot be peace in our time. So we start fighting.
The time for peace is over.
That's true.
Round three.
We start basically trying to dogpile onto Scott, but his dice are ridiculous.
And it's pretty hot dice.
And my dice, I'm at -1 on my combat rolls for being in the university.
Yeah,
so
that's one of your racial
abilities.
Shortcomings.
Yeah,
basically.
Right. It's the trade-off.
So I wasn't super effective.
Nor was I.
And so we kind of get around, we're scoring stuff, and it gets to a point where Scott's at 8 points, Josh and I are at 7, and
Trevor's
at like 2, 3, something like that.
I kid.
We get on to the last round.
But those first two control points were, or first two victory points were missed on those first two turns.
Might also be worth plugging here that when I was at 7 points and the rest of you were at about 4, Jay's looking at the objectives in the board, and he's ready to call it. He's trying to talk the rest of the table into a concession.
There were several concessions.
Okay, and I'm sitting over, like, I feel like I'm in a strong position, but because of the objectives that are out, and because I know that I've drawn the wrath of the entire
table.
Was
I wrong?
Okay.
Spoiler alert.
It came down to some RNGesus.
We can fast forward. Go.
Okay, so we're on the last round. Scott has 8 points. Yeah. Josh has 7. I have 7. Trevor has 5. The speaker is Josh. You pick Imperial. Trevor picks...
I have retaken Mechtar Rex at this point.
Correct.
So actually, you never lost.
You,
oh, yeah,
Jay
right.
failed to eliminate you.
Yeah, which was...
Well, no, it was...
my ground troop.
Mutual.
Yeah. Mutual is a session. Right. Anyways. Anyway, I can't remember what you picked, Trevor.
For the last round?
Yeah, last round. Yeah.
It was like warfare.
Probably
and
warfare.
You picked warfare
so
first.
One of the things that had happened throughout this game is because nobody had been really attacking me and I'd been taking technology over and over again. I actually had, like,
really strong stuff.
Like, I had big guns. Like,
yeah.
They were just slow.
Slow, yeah. Big guns. I mean, that's what the turtles do.
Right.
But I have PDSs that, like, my flagship shoots 3 PDS shots every combat. It's ridiculous. Like, the amount of devastation I can do is big, but I am blocked out because Jay and Josh have worked their way across the board in the center, basically keeping me from being able to get at Scott.
And you don't have the blue technology to get through the asteroid
field.
Yeah,
and I'm not fast enough, and I don't have the technologies to be able to even get over there to help.
Right.
Warfare.
We completely sailed over my sneak attack on the traitorous Hassan homeland.
That happened. This last round. Yeah.
So I end up taking diplomacy. The reason I did was I was expecting we were going to be trying to bash up on Scott, and I didn't want him playing diplomacy to
stop us from hitting his homeworld.
There was an objective.
Right.
Scott had 21 influence, and there was one that was spend
16
influence to gain 2 points. So if he scores that, he wins.
Right.
Yeah.
So I take diplomacy.
We have to take away at least 7.
Some planets.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, 6 influence we needed to take away.
So I take diplomacy to stop Scott from doing it. In retrospect, I probably should have taken leadership.
You absolutely should have taken leadership.
And Scott takes leadership. So,
which is important because it first person to 10 went. So, right, so even right. if, even if yeah, somebody, so else
even
can
if
get
we
to
made it all the way to the
time,
status,
I've
phase,
got the initiative.
You get the
advantage.
Chance to score first.
Right. Right.
One of the other key things that's important on this round that we haven't explained previously is that you can't, during the status phase, well, you can't score objectives at all.
Right.
If you don't control your home system, you can't score objectives.
Right. And right. you right. have to control
all the planets.
It. You have to
right.
control all
there
the
are
planets.
Three planets
and
in my home
And that becomes
world.
Very key, especially late game. I don't think I've ever seen a game where somebody didn't lose their home planet.
Yeah, that's so right.
true.
Yeah.
Stop them from
After
scoring.
Incurring the wrath of the galaxy. Yeah.
Another thing we should say is when you take over a planet, you take the planet and becomes exhausted. So we had a plan. We were going to take over some of Scott's planets to get him below that
16 threshold.
Jay activated diplomacy early so that I couldn't use the secondary to then refresh them when
right.
I took them back.
Right, right. And so we did succeed in getting him under there. Josh actually had a potential to win the game.
Not quite Hail Mary, but close.
On this, before we got to the status phase. So right. in order to do this, you didn't have 16
he
influence.
He had the Imperial card, so right. he could score objectives.
I was five
prior
short.
During the action.
And during the agenda phase previously, we had elected one of Trevor's planets that was worth one victory point. So Josh right. needed to score the Imperial, the public objective for
right.
16. That would get you 2 points. Then he had to go take over that planet.
Right. Which
but
I could do.
You were short a little bit on
influence.
Yeah. So you activated trade to try to get resources so that you'd be able to score it. But then you were not going to be able to, score the, you couldn't do
I couldn't
enough
pick the planet.
All at once.
Right. Right.
So you, while you do that, then it goes around to Scott, and Scott swoops in and takes
occupies
your home
my home more.
You did try attacking
all three of them.
You did yeah. try attacking his carrier, but right. of course Scott Dice happened. And
whoa! I also spent action cards.
He did. He worked hard for it.
Okay.
Scott also was playing sorry, I just forgot the name of the race. Anyway,
Federation
Soul. They're the humans, and the humans are like
make troops like crazy.
Yeah, they make troops like crazy. And he also has his troops are better than everybody else's.
Yeah,
troops.
That's
He's
true.
Upgraded his troops.
They're space marines.
No, I didn't upgrade. Those are
space marines. Yeah.
Your basic troops are
the biggest mistake I made was a misplacement of my flagship. It was
sure, yeah.
in one of Scott's systems, and it could have been blocking his path to my homeworld instead, and it still would have done what it needed to do, which was be next to an anomaly.
So long story short, Scott takes over your home planet. You try.
I can't take it back.
Valiantly to get it back. You don't. Scott and I jockey some. We get to the status phase. It comes down to Scott's going to be able to draw one secret objective. If he's able to score that secret objective, we know he'll be able to score a public and he'll win.
Right.
It turns out that he draws one where he is able to score it. He ends up winning on one. If it had gone to two, I would have scored three.
Right.
And I would have been able to end the game.
Yep.
So I should have picked one.
It was amazing.
I'm not sure.
I don't know.
If diplomacy would have been. I don't know how that would have interacted.
I'm not sure because I think if I well no because you still would have beaten me on initiative because even if I
right.
even if I used
well you would
have
had
to
have attacked
protect,
enough
to
of my cleared out enough of my stuff
right,
to,
right.
yeah but I had a fair number of commodities
yes
so
we've all bent the knee to Emperor Scotius Ray once again.
Well, you may you fucking.
I'll incinerate the rest of you. I'm fine with that.
What?
Your firstborn sons too.
Fine.
See,
I'm not
this,
setting up Galactic
I
Wall Street.
That you haven't. Oh, Scott, Josh, you should know better by now. Okay, let's move on to giving our review of the game.
Okay.
I think it's. I mean, we can just gush now. I guess. I think it's obvious by now that we're
yeah that we're
big
that,
fans.
That we're big fans. Yeah, five absolutely. Out of five arbitrary measuring units.
Yes.
The funny thing is we all love TI3, but it had its little quirks and funny things, and we've talked about them throughout this episode about how you know there were certain things that were just odd or
weird or frustrations.
It
feels like almost all of them have been cleaned
I'm
up.
I'm sure we're gonna find some eventually. Right, we're only a few
but
games.
But the thing
in at this
is TI4 to me feels like the iterative evolution that you need, like that you need, frankly, our political system to be like, you know, it's just got the little bit of solutions without being this,
yeah, it's not
you know,
sweeping
burn down the house and throw out the bathwater and it just
there's
clean things up.
It still
real
feels
nice.
Like TI.
Yeah.
The game still plays very similarly.
If you did not like TI3,
you won't like TI4.
You will hate TI4.
Yeah. I mean.
And honestly, the only review that's on Board Game Geek right now is someone who's like, this is the biggest disappointment of ever, and like I hated TI3 and
blah, blah. If you hated
TI3, why are you making this effort?
What were you expecting?
Yeah, exactly.
If you're not in it for a 4-hour story, 6-hour story, you know.
Well, we should say.
I bet the four of us, from setup, with fewer family interruptions.
Yeah, yeah.
We've got a game under. We could play in four hours. I think we could very reasonably finish a game in 4 hours.
Yeah, absolutely. No, absolutely. I agree.
No problem.
Yeah.
One of the things, there's several things that have sped that have
especially
this
was this especially if it's set up beforehand.
You know, right. And if we, you know, there were some learning things here.
This play session from setup to finish was about 7 hours, just a little bit under.
I think it was, six and a half.
It was about 6 and a half.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I agree with Scott. Like, if you don't count family interruptions and stuff, it was 6, frankly.
Well, right. And I mean, and that wasn't exactly excessive. I mean, I felt like there was, we spent a little bit of time in the rule book, but it wasn't excessive. I mean, about half of the game time is just people wheeling and dealing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right.
Yeah, but I mean, space you need contracts to come to the table understanding. So we all have played TI before, and these rules haven't changed enough for it to be completely foreign to us, but we were learning. But for some, but I'm just a warning.
Some
to
of the subtle
out there
differences
gonna,
make a big difference.
Yeah, yeah, sure, absolutely. Yeah.
But I'm giving this as a subtle warning to those of you who are going to play this game for the first time with friends and expect to finish it in 6 hours like we did. That's not going
to
happen.
Yeah. Give yourself 8 to 10.
8 to 10.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And have a nice, you know, space and meal and appetizers and hors d'oeuvres to go with it.
These friends need to be committed enough that they all need to have read the rules themselves prior. Don't come to the table.
That's required on the application. Absolutely. Yeah.
Because if you do, you're going to be lost, and you're going to cause this game instead of being 8 to 10 hours, it's going to be
12 to 14.
It's going to be 12 to 14, and you're going to give up.
And people are going to have a worse time.
Yeah, it's not going to be fun. You're going to walk away from it.
The learn to play rules, which is all of the bullet points and all the highlights, and then the big nice rules, which is like all of the minutiae, all the corner cases.
They're
both available for free on the Fantasy Flight website. There's no excuse to not read the rules
The learn to play rules are only like 17, 18 pages long.
Yeah, with diagrams.
They're very well written. Yeah. They're very easy to follow. It's not that hard if you're going to commit to a 6 to 10 hour game to sit down and read 17 pages of rules just to make it flow better.
Yeah.
It's better for everybody.
You also need, and this is something that happens in my play group, and why I talk about Game of Thrones second edition all the time is you get, you know, some people think that they're, you know, can keep their emotions in check in their serious face game.
Right.
You need to understand that it's like only one person is going to win.
Yes.
You are going to be backstabbed. You will come into conflict with every other player at the table at some point, and you know, you're going to commit your whole day, and you might not be the winner. And if that's what you care about, might not be the game for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I prefer the term breach of contract to backstab.
I prefer the term breach of contract.
It's not as,
I love how he's blaming you for this.
It's not as, I think, treacherous as, say, diplomacy.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
You can certainly.
This will not end friendships. It will nourish the appropriate friendships.
Correct. Yeah.
This is the type of game where you can build a relationship of trust with somebody and maintain it throughout the entire game. Both of you can't win together, so somebody's not gonna get everything what they want. But you don't necessarily have to.
But you can get your objectives from attacking other people.
Right. Exactly. Right.
But the whole point is this is a epic story game with political things going on, deals being made. Much of it doesn't involve with actually what's going on at the table. It involves interactions with your opponents. If that's something that interests you, then this is a game you're gonna like.
Absolutely.
If you would rather have a worker placement game where you can build your engine and you can have something happen like
may I recommend Terraforming to Mars? Yeah, the new board is out. It's fantastic.
Expansion boards are hot sauce.
Nice.
So if that's what you're looking for, then this is not the game for you. If you're looking for a political game with, you know, a galaxy
theme everywhere,
and technology. Oh yeah.
Oozes
and
extremely high player
and the bits are amazing.
There's basically two genres of board games, either the Euro games or the Ameritrash. And really, this
by
is
the people who love the Euro games.
This is the pinnacle of Ameritrash games.
Yes, it is.
It is the PhD level Ameritrash.
This is probably the best Ameritrash game ever made.
Agreed.
And this is the best version of it.
Yeah.
Double agreed.
Excellent.
Fourth edition agreed.
Well, thank you everyone for listening to this. I hope that you have enjoyed it. I know that we did. We do have pre-sales of Twilight Imperium available on Discount Games Inc. They are the pre-sales come with the rules come in a hard cover book, and they come with two art prints.
Oh, cool.
So you can sign up for those while you can.
Fantastic.
Yeah, limited numbers available.
That is definitely true.
Especially after Josh and I took ours. First in line.
Well, on that note, we'd like to thank everyone for listening to another episode of
Chain Attack.